43. There it is. Flores is crouched beside a tree, doing an admirable job of ignoring the fact that everything here is totally new. Aside from the breathable air, it's like being on another planet. Other than artists' renderings, no human being in the history of time has ever seen any of this. Following Flores's pointed finger, I see the solar array. It's vast, covering the slope of a pint-sized mountain that's been preserved by the particle collider's effect. I try to picture it all in my mind. The giant rings stretching from below Adele and reaching all the way here on the far side of town. The network of tunnels below the town, directing power and control, all of it creating a kind of bubble around Black Creek. The bubble sustains most of what's inside the area, carrying it all through time. But the bubble has holes, or at least weak spots, I think, which would account for the disappearance of my truck. The effect on that empty stretch of mountain was enough to carry us back in time, but not quite enough for the vehicle. That's my theory, anyway. At the base of the mountain is a sturdy-looking brick building. It's a boxy, nondescript structure bearing no signage and no warnings. No keep-out signs, either, but I think that's implied by the tall fence covered in razor wire. "Where are the guards?" Cassie asks. "It's a good question. I don't see any sentries, human or drone. The only thing I can hear is a mass of bird calls, some of them recognizable, the munching of our loosely tied horses enjoying a snack of lush foliage, and the gentle whir of 1,000 solar panels slowly rotating to track the sun. Reflected light fills the air with an orange glow that's growing duller by the minute. A bird chirps to our right, so close it must be on the ground. I start to question the bird's proximity and realize I'm once again mistaking Enola's bird call for the real thing. I whistle a reply, acknowledging that I've heard her, and then I motion for the others to follow. We creep through the tall trees that are weighed down by leaves the size of men. The canopy is thick and all but blocks out the sun, transporting us from sunset to twilight in just a few steps. The air is fragrant with decay and blooming life. Flowers all around slowly close for the night. Bees the size of my hand buzz away, gathering at hives that must be a nightmare to stumble across. We find Enola crouching inside a stand of ferns, only visible because she's waving me over. Gathered in the greenery, I have no trouble spotting why the facility is quiet. A large portion of the fence has been torn out of the ground and dragged inside. Several of the solar panels at the bottom of the hill have been destroyed. The remains of several men decorate the walls and the concrete foundation upon which the facility rests. "Tsul Kalu," Enola whispers. "Doesn't change anything," I say. "And if he's gone, he's made our job easier." Enola doesn't react. Her gaze is unflinching. "Thoughts?" I ask Flores. "Find the front door, kick it in, try to find a way to shut it down, and if we can't, we shoot the shit out of anything that looks important." "That's about as complicated a plan as the army ever comes up with," I tease. "But it'll work." To the group. "Stay low, stay quiet, do not fire unless we're in imminent danger." When I get nods all around, I take point with Cassie at my back, followed by Levi, Enola, and Flores at the rear, watching our six. How many times did I depend on him like this in the future? How many missions did we run together before our last? How many more will there be in the future? Just this one, I hope. In a world with one town of people, there won't be much need for a military strike force, unless the dinosaurs rise up against us. I crouch walk out of the thick forest, bathed in orange sunlight. If the Appalachian Mountains still existed, we'd already be cast in shadow. With them missing, we have about 30 minutes of direct light remaining, and another 30 after that, before the sky goes dark. Sweeping my rifle back and forth, I step onto the concrete. I slow when I reach the flattened fencing. The razor wire is coated in blood and little bits of what looks like white flesh. I crouch over the gore, and when the others gather around me, I say, "It wasn't Tsul Kalu who tore down this fence." "How can you tell?" Levi asks. He's been filled in on the monster's existence, but a lot of details have been left out. "The blood is red," I say. "Is there anything in this time that could do this?" I point to the remains of a man splashed against the side of the power station wall. "And that?" He thinks for a moment.
"Appalachiosaurus, related to the T-Rex, 25 feet from snout to tail, has longer forelimbs, though, not so."
He does an imitation of a short-limbed T-Rex.
"Would make short work of any of us, maybe even the Nephilim."
With that in mind, I say,
Let's do our best to avoid contact. I'm afraid that doesn't work for me.
Langdon's voice is loud, way too loud. A drone descends from the sky.
Your betrayal is not completely unexpected.
My loyalty is to Black Creek, I tell him. You're going to get all these people killed.
If that were my intention, they would already be dead. Of course, if that's what it will take to succeed in my mission, I would gladly sacrifice you all, starting with those still in captivity here.
The drone does a slow circle, the camera zeroing in on each of us. Enola takes aim, but I push the Winchester muzzle down and shake my head. As loud as Langdon is being, he's nowhere near as loud as a gunshot. So far, nothing has reacted to his voice, so we might be in the clear. I motion for the others to follow and strike out again, trying to act like I'm indifferent to the drone's presence.
I see, Langdon says. Having absconded with the people for whom you care, thanks to my less than trustworthy help, the rest of my prisoners are expendable. You're turning out to be quite the anti-hero.
The building's doorway is held open by the remains of a guard, the lower half of his body missing. Why would a predator do this? I wonder.
I have no doubt an Appalachiosaurus would eat a person, but why would it eat only half a person? Why would it scatter the other people around? Was the attack territorial? Perhaps blind rage because of the strange building and people suddenly in its territory.
It's looking for you, Langdon says, gaining my full attention. It has been stalking the mountain, killing everything it comes across. It's quite impressive, really. Sadly, I believe it has discovered your precious Black Creek. How many people are there? How many survived?
The drone's camera shifts back and forth. I don't see your family with you. You didn't leave them there, did you?
I tense, looking back toward Black Creek. How long would it take to reach them?
Oh, don't worry, Langdon says. I'm no monster.
You'll defend them? I ask, wondering if Langdon might actually send his drone army to defend Black Creek in return for me not pulling the plug. It would be a tempting offer, but it would leave us hurtling through time. He laughs.
No, why would I?
I can picture him shaking his head at me, and I really want to twist it off his shoulders.
This one drone is all the resources I will commit to the effort, and I have no intention of battling the creature. I will leave that to you.
Three flares launch skyward, bright in the sun's fading light. Our position has been revealed to anything within a few miles, including Sul Kalu.
There, Langdon says. That did the trick.
Knowing he's got drones in the air all over the region, I have little doubt that one is tracking the god of the hunt from a distance even now. If Langdon says the beast is coming for us, I have no reason to doubt him.
Whatever you're intending on doing, I suggest you hurry, Langdon says.
I'm frozen for a moment. Is he simply taunting me, confident that we will fail and that Sul Kalu will kill us? Or is he simply not worried? Are we too late? He's trying to get in my head, I decide.
Let's go.
I run for the open door, leading with my weapon, ready to shoot anything that moves. The drone paces me, staying just out of reach.
Run, 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 as quick as you can.
Hey, I hear Enola say behind me, and when I turn to look, I find Flores squatted down, his fingers cupped together. Enola leaps up, putting one foot in his hands before being launched upward. Enola sails toward the drone, hatchet in hand.
Holy shit, she's awesome,
Cassie manages to say in the time it takes for Enola to reach the drone. The hatchet strikes hard and true, shattering one of the four propellers. Unable to compensate for the impact, the drone careens sideways and crashes into the concrete. I'm pretty sure it could lift off again, but Levi reaches it before it can, stomping on it with his boots until it's a ruined mess.
I really hate that guy, Flores says.
Enola picks herself up off the ground, but freezes halfway up, eyes locked on the dark forest.
Is he here?
I ask, scanning the shadows. Out in the open like this, Sul Kalu would make short work of us. Our only hope is to either be gone when he arrives or out of reach inside a building built to withstand forces stronger than him. Enola snaps out of her rigid readiness.
No, she says. Something else.
Something else? Cassie asks.
A face, Enola says. White, like you.
She points at Levi and me.
But not like us.
Not human, I guess. She nods.
Not people.
What color was Appalachiosaurus? I ask Levi. The kid shakes his head.
Not even King Solomon with all of his wisdom could have told you what colored dinosaurs were.
Remembering the white flesh at the fallen fence, I strike out for the entrance again, reaching it with no more interruptions. Aside from the man at the door, the interior is empty and clean. The violence was relegated to the exterior, but I don't detect any signs of occupation either. Could everyone have died outside? That seems odd. If there were people still alive here, wouldn't Langdon send them for us? We could have been ambushed while he talked my ear off. Instead, he summoned Sul Kalu, who might very well inflict serious damage on the power station during his war against us. Having a bad feeling about what we're going to find, I rush through the facility, kicking open doors without fear of resistance.
"Shouldn't we slow down?" Cassie asks. "This doesn't seem safe."
"No one's here," I say.
"What makes you say that?"
Flores asks as we round the one and only flight of stairs. I kick open the door ahead and step into a large control room lined with consoles. It doesn't take more than a glance to confirm what I feared. The station is shut down, no longer sending power to Synergy. Whatever resources Langdon needed to finish what he started, he's already got it. We've been on a wild goose chase this whole time, out of his hair and keeping Sul Kalu, the only thing he really saw as a threat to his plans, fully occupied.
"We've been played,"
Flores says, looking at the information displayed on the screen. "It's still collecting power, storing it in batteries on site, but the relay to the main facility has been shut down."
"If there are batteries here,"
Cassie says, and she doesn't need to finish the thought.
"Shit,"
Levi says. A sharp hiss from Enola silences us. She stands still near the door, ear turned up. She stalks out of the room, Winchester at the ready. We follow her down the hall toward a second floor window looking out at the forest. She crouches down, motioning for us to do the same.
"I don't see anything," Levi says.
"He's here," she insists, eyes laser focused.
"How can you tell?"
Levi asks. Four panicked horses bolt from the forest, charging over the fallen fence and trapping themselves inside the facility. I'm about to note that one of the horses is missing when I see it approaching in the sky.